Blog Talk Radio.
And here we are. This is Jeff Bushman, and this is the Jeff Bushman Program, or Jeff Bushman Show, or Jeff Bushman Experience. Actually, we are back on the air at Blog Talk Radio after an absence of several years, and some of our old shows may still be available on the site, I'm not sure, but I do know that some of our shows are available at jeffbushman.posthaven.com. Jeff Bushman is J-E-F-F-B-U-S-H-M-A-N. .posthaven.com for some of the old shows, and of course, after a few shows are in the can here, you'll be able to, of course, hear the show at blogtalkradio.com. I should mention that there will be some other outlets we'll be available on, so if you are hearing this on one of those other outlets, the blogtalkradio.com is the mothership for these programs. Today we are broadcasting live on December 7th, 2014, and we will be dark next Sunday, but we will return after that most Sundays at 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, we're always available for download after the program has been recorded. We have a show that is essentially about politics, economics, hopefully humor, and writing and authors. We will be doing another show during the week. We haven't selected the time yet. We'll be doing another show during the week. And at that time, we'll be doing interviews. So a Sunday show is just me and any callers who wish to join us at the call-in number, which is 347-850-8702. If you care to join us today, it would surprise me enormously, but if you care to join us on a future show, of course, feel free. And additionally, during the show that where we have the interviews, guests will also be invited. But most of you will prefer to listen both live and, of course, in download version. I mentioned we cover politics, history, economics. We're going to talk about a number of those things today. I'm not certain we'll do the full 30 minutes, but I have a feeling we will. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about those items. But before we do that, one other thing. If you'd like to read some of our writing, we have I have written three books that are available on Amazon as ebooks. You can most easily access those through our blog site, which is bushmanbooks.blogspot.com. I had to think for a moment. bushmanbooks.blogspot.com, and there is a link to the page on Amazon where you can see those three books, and if you wish to download them to your Kindle device or to the Kindle app on your phone or program on your computer, you can do all that. Each of those books sells for just $2.99 as ebooks, and the books are a mystery novel called Bobby's Been Shot, The Mobile Millionaire, about investment in mobile homes, and Amusing Sex, Funny Sex, which is a compilation of the columns I write for Scottsdale Health Magazine here in Arizona. Now let's get into the program. Today we are talking about the Mary Landrieu, I guess you would call it, diselection yesterday in Louisiana. We'll also be talking, among other things, about an Uber situation in India. We'll be talking about today's day in history, which is Pearl Harbor Day. And we will also talk about, briefly, I promise, Eric Garner and Michael Brown. So stay with us, keep on listening, and we'll get into it. So first, let's talk about Mary Landrieu. Mary Landrieu had been a two-term senator from Louisiana, the last statewide elected Democrat in that state, though there are some local Democrats, including her brother, the mayor of New Orleans, in that state, but by and large, Louisiana has changed in the 12 years that Mary Landrieu was in the Senate, from a generally Democratic state to a generally and reliably Republican state. The election of her opponent, which didn't surprise anybody, ends her 12 years, of course, but also ends any, as I said, any statewide elected officers in Louisiana who are not Republicans. So that's what happened there. This widens the majority, or if you will, widens the gap between Republicans and Democrats in the Senate. And the Republicans now have a fairly comfortable majority in the Senate. Whether Mary Landrieu or her opponent would be in the Senate is not a major big deal, primarily because you have her opponent, who is a normally conservative Republican, and she, who is a rather conservative Democrat. So in the sense of what votes they would take on most issues, it really doesn't matter. What does matter is when it comes time to confirm or oppose the confirmation of presidential appointees, including Supreme Court nominees, there is a difference. Mary Landrieu could have been expected to confirm virtually all of President Obama's appointees, unless there was someone she specifically would have objected to. And her opponent and the victor in the senatorial race can generally be expected to vote against those nominees. So, as said, it does make some difference. So that's what happened in Louisiana. Normally, when we talk about a business negotiation or a business deal, and we talk about someone getting raped, we're saying that they got the far worst of the deal. Well, when we talk about the fact that an Uber passenger in India was raped, we mean a lot more than that. Unfortunately, there is an accusation. Obviously, we don't know if it's true. There is an accusation by a passenger in an Uber vehicle in India who claims she was raped by the driver. Again, we're not there, and the evidence hasn't been heard, so we clearly don't know what the evidence will show. But as of the moment, that's the accusation. And the gentleman who was a gentleman, the guy who was the driver, has now been arrested. A brief deviation. Uber, as most people know, is a ride-sharing service. It is, if not quite worldwide, it is at least international, even though it's not even in every state in the U.S. And there's going to be a problem coming up, apparently, for that company in Oregon. Because, pardon me, in Oregon, it's clear that the service is illegal. Many cab companies in the United States have objected to Uber being allowed to take up their service because, besides the fact they just don't like the competition, which is obvious and understandable, it's also a case where the taxi cab companies have had to go through an approval process, some inspections, et cetera. And they're always subject to scrutiny by whoever handles the transportation organizations in that state. And Uber is not. Uber charges lower prices, but of course they also have lower costs. There's also been some discussion about the amount of insurance the drivers have, since Uber's drivers are private and may not carry sufficient liability coverage, which wouldn't help the lady in India, but the fact is that most drivers in most states have the minimum amount of liability insurance coverage that the state requires. When you're transporting people commercially, you usually have to have more insurance, but that's not really a requirement that Uber imposes on its drivers as a rule. So there have been some issues, but Uber has also had some problems in terms of negative publicity lately, with regard to comments that they were going to investigate a journalist who had written a story unfavorable to them, and all kinds of things like that. The story in India, however, points up that these really are private drivers. I'm not saying that there's been no such thing as criminal activity by cab drivers, but at least you know that if it falls short of the kind of thing that allegedly occurred in India, the driver would have to answer to somebody. In the case of Uber, if someone does something sufficiently more petty, they might not have to answer for it at all, except the rating would be lower. Again, rape is obviously not something that's just going to reduce the number of stars you get. It's obviously a much more serious deal. I heard of something locally here, and we are broadcasting from Arizona, where the high today will be 73, or by now has been 73. I mentioned that to you is because if you're in the Midwest or the East, and you're having snow and cold weather and all that, I'd like you to be a little jealous. Pardon me. Something happened with a cab driver here locally, from what I understand, where what occurred was kind of interesting in terms of the charge that was ultimately leveled. He was accused by two women of... the cab driver was male. He was accused by two women of offering to eliminate the fare that they were being charged if they would perform sexual activity with him. They reported it to the police. Two women, two separate incidents. Let me say that although I don't know if there was ever a conviction, I believe the story. And what's interesting is what he was charged with, the crime he was charged with. If you'd care to guess, I'll give you a couple of seconds and talk about another story, and then I'll come back and tell you what the crime was with which the cab driver was charged for offering to eliminate the fare in exchange for sex. Okay, that's your challenge. No fare using Google. I'll be back with that in just a minute. But also, today is Pearl Harbor Day. It's December 7th. Now, obviously, if you're hearing this in podcast and it's after December 7th, clearly it's not Pearl Harbor Day. But today is Pearl Harbor Day when we're broadcasting live. And that occurred on December 7th, 1941. And, yes, it was before my time, too. And I'm going to tell you, after I give you the answer to that question I asked a moment ago, I'm going to tell you why I think it was one of the best things to have ever happened to the world, though not to the families, clearly, whose members were killed on that day in that attack at Pearl Harbor, which, for those of you who don't know, is in Hawaii. First, let me give you the answer to the question. The crime with which the cab driver was charged for offering to eliminate the fare that two separate women on separate trips were being charged in exchange for sex, the charge that he got hit with, prostitution. And if you think about it, it makes sense. He was offering sex in exchange for money. And I would have thought solicitation of prostitution, but when I heard what the crime was, it did make some silly sense to me. Okay, why was Pearl Harbor, in my opinion, one of the best things that could have ever happened to the world? Well, here's what's going. You have to get this thing in context. At the time, December of 1941, Britain was essentially fighting Germany, Italy, and Japan alone. It was the only power that was lined up against them. The United States was technically a neutral, but was really helping England through the Lend-Lease program and through other mechanisms to try to make the war effort easier for England. But the sentiment in the United States was clearly opposed to coming involved in the war. Well, part of this was just America's desire to use its geographical isolation to be internationally isolated as well. We didn't want to get involved in a war. We saw the damage that had been done in war, even when news had come out to some degree about all the horrible things that Hitler was doing. We still didn't want to get involved in the war as a country. There were certainly people who did, but most of us didn't. Roosevelt, who was president at the time, knew we would have to get involved in the war at some point, if for no other reason than to eliminate the possibility that Hitler would take over a significant portion of the world, which would have been bad for pretty much everybody, not just Jews, not just gypsies, not just gay people. Hitler was against all those people and anybody else who was going to be standing in his way. Arguably, he saw himself as a latter-day Napoleon or Alexander the Great. So what happened is, even though Roosevelt knew we would have to get involved in the war, he couldn't convince enough of the American people that we could proceed. So when Japan attacked, it changed the dynamic entirely. It changed the dynamic because, obviously, once we were attacked, we had to go to war. The declaration of war by Congress, which was the last time war was ever declared by Congress. All those other wars we've had since then have not been declared by Congress. But there was one. The December 7th attack resulted in an address by the president to the joint houses of Congress in which he requested of the Congress a declaration of war, and they quickly complied for rather clear reasons. And the declaration was actually on December 8th. But if we had not entered the war, there's a better than even chance that A, Hitler and Japan would have won, but B, at least as importantly, that Churchill, despite his natural inclination and his prior refusal to seek a separate peace with Hitler, would have at some point had no choice. England was essentially losing the war through 1941. They were losing it in England, they were losing it in all their colonies, and they were losing it in the islands where off of Asia, where Japan was kicking their butt. The only way that England could have been on the victorious side is if the U.S. got involved or some other miracle occurred. That miracle was not on the horizon. Japan made its biggest mistake by bombing the U.S. because we got into the war. Now, we were kind of in the war before that in the sense that we, as said, had been aiding the Allies, primarily England. Now, you know, if you studied history but not deeply, you know that France was also opposed to Hitler and that Italy was on the side of Germany and Japan. Italy wasn't much of a power to reckon with. And through June of 1940, France wasn't anything to reckon with either, except for a resistance element in the country of France, because Hitler had occupied France beginning in June of 40, and they were effectively out of the war. So, although they did take credit for the victory once the war was won, but that was the situation we faced in December of 1941, because we did get in, because with the assistance clearly of England and with our primarily carrying the ball, although the British might disagree with that, we won the war. And after that, after the war, we became one of two big world powers, the other one being the Soviet Union. Now, Russia was also involved in the war against Hitler after Hitler broke the pact to not fight against Russia. As soon as they made that, shortly after they made that deal, Hitler violated it. Well, again, Russia became involved in the war in 40, and they certainly were held off the Germans rather well. But the problem was they could only do so much and they could only go so far. They weren't the kind of power, and they weren't the kind of they didn't have the industrial might that the United States did to build munitions and planes and all the rest. And we had begun doing that back before we were involved in the war directly. But the attack on Pearl Harbor made an enormous difference in the world, both then and, I would suggest respectfully, is still doing so. It really relates to the U.S. becoming a power. Before we go into our next subject, I want to invite you, if you're so inclined, to call in. As a rule, these programs have relatively few listeners when the shows are on live. So if you're listening to us in download, in podcast version, let me mention again to you the time we're on. But first, let me give out the number for the call-ins if you wish to call in. It's 347-850-8702. The time when we're normally on live is on Sundays between 6:30 p.m. Eastern and 7 p.m. Eastern. So that's obviously 30 minutes, but starting 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, 5:30 Central, and 4:30 Mountain. So if you'd like to join us on another occasion, other than today, of course, you're invited to call in today if you're listening live, but if you'd like to listen to us on another occasion, that would be the way to do it. That would be the time to do it. The other thing I wanted to mention again to you is bushmanbooks.blogspot.com. And by the way, you can help out the program a bit if you're planning on buying your Christmas gifts or Hanukkah gifts or Kwanzaa gifts through Amazon, which is a wonderful idea, then I would ask you to go to bushmanbooks.blogspot.com, and if you buy it through there, it won't cost you any extra, but if you buy it through the link that's provided at that site for Amazon, they will send us a few shekels and help defray the cost of the program. So if you would be kind enough to do that, we would appreciate it. Returning to the other subjects I wanted to cover, the Michael Brown story has been covered in depth. I'm only going to mention a couple of things. What would have happened if this had been a legitimate grand jury? A couple of things of importance. Number one, there never would have been testimony by the accused. The accused was Officer Wilson. If this had been a legitimate grand jury, he would have never been testifying. And his attorney would have never let him testify. Normally, a grand jury has one purpose, and that is, and that's supposedly the purpose of this grand jury, to determine if there's probable cause, convict a specific individual. Probable cause basically means that if all of the testimony that's presented by the prosecutor is believed, and there is no testimony, there's no evidence, and if there were to be no evidence presented by the defendant at trial, so the theory behind grand jury indictments, if all of the testimony and evidence provided by the prosecutor establishes that it is more likely than not that the defendant would be convicted in the absence of defense evidence and testimony being presented, there is probable cause. Definitionally, that's essentially what it is. In this case, when you have a situation where you have a grand jury, the defendant's attorney wouldn't let him near the grand jury room because there's no opportunity to cross-examine prosecution witnesses, and the prosecutor, if the prosecutor is serious about indicting and convicting this guy, is going to try to bring out every possible negative aspect of the individual and the crime. So unless the defendant knew, quote-unquote, the fix was in, there would be no way the defendant's attorney nor the defendant would ever get near the grand jury room. Obviously, he did. Clearly, they knew that the goal of the prosecutor was to make sure that Wilson was not indicted. Okay. That said, there's one other element that a legitimate grand jury would have questioned. One of the things that came out in the evidence that was offered online by and elsewhere by the prosecutor was that Officer Wilson's gun was subject to a DNA test. If you remember hearing about Wilson's story, Brown tried to grab his gun and had his hand on Wilson's gun, his pistol. They ran a DNA test, but they never revealed to the grand jury, apparently, and certainly not in the evidence that was presented to the public, they never revealed what was on the DNA test or in the DNA test. The normal rule of law is that if you have possession of evidence and you don't present it, it's assumed that it goes against you. Okay? Well, it wasn't presented at all. So it suggests, if the prosecutor did have in mind having Wilson not indicted, why didn't he present the DNA evidence? The lack of presentation of that evidence suggests that maybe Michael Brown's DNA wasn't on the gun. If he touched it, it would have been. We don't know what the DNA test was because they never revealed it. That suggests a problem. Okay, end of the Michael Brown-Wilson case, because the likelihood is that the federal government is not going to bring a civil rights case in that situation, because there is some culpatory evidence with regard to Brown as well as exculpatory evidence and questions. And I think it's fairly well agreed that a civil rights accusation is not going to be made. A civil rights indictment is not going to be made on a federal basis against Wilson. Okay. Next, Eric Garner. For those who don't know, Eric Garner was a young man who was selling single cigarettes at a New York City train station, I believe it was the Port Authority, for 50 cents each. One could see why this would be a good business, by the way. A pack of cigarettes in New York sells for, I read the other day, $14 or $15 a pack because of all the taxes that are on it. And the taxes are on it to discourage smoking. It does discourage smoking, but it also encourages bootlegging. And also, if you live near a border of the state of New York, you're going to go out of state to buy your cigarettes. But if you're in the heart of New York State, you're not going to go very far. And if someone's offering you 50 cents a cigarette, that comes out to like $10 a pack, I think. And I don't know what that means in terms of where Garner got his cigarettes, but he obviously got out of state. Otherwise, he's wasn't a very good businessman. But anyway, he was supposedly selling his 50-cent cigarettes singly. That's against the law because it's an evasion of city taxes or state taxes. And the police wanted to arrest him or question him. And the video that has been shown widely demonstrates that what they did was they entered into a chokehold, and it was more than one officer. One officer did a chokehold, another officer, once Garner was down, got on his chest. And the chokehold is known to be dangerous. In fact, the New York City Police Department has in their manual that they're not supposed to use a chokehold at all. That may be going too far, but outside of that question, they did. And by now you know, Eric Garner said something like 8 or 9 times, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe," and then he died. The question in that has to be asked. And, oh, the other fact that's rather important that I almost left out. Eric Garner, I'm sorry, the officers who killed Eric Garner, and I'm not saying they murdered him, that's a judgment for a trial court, but the coroner ruled this was a homicide, meaning the death of Eric Garner was caused by another person. That doesn't mean the other person was blameworthy. It doesn't mean they should be convicted of first-degree murder. It just means he was killed by another person. Okay. The question is, since the grand jury in Staten Island, which is where that happened, which is one of the five counties in the city of New York, one of the five boroughs, they chose not to indict the officers. They indicted nobody as a result of Eric Garner's death as a result of a chokehold. Okay, now, even with all the bad things, the terrible ways in which the grand jury that was making a determination on the Michael Brown case, in spite of all the bad things that happened, it's not the grand juror's fault, it's the prosecutor's issues. But arguably, you could make an argument. I understand that people have made an argument. I don't agree with it. You can make an argument that it was appropriate to not indict Officer Wilson, okay? How could you not indict in Staten Island? How is it possible you could not indict the officers who killed Eric Garner? One could make a good argument. Well, one could make an argument anyway, that the officers should not be held, should not be found guilty of murder, manslaughter, reckless homicide, anything, that they shouldn't be found guilty of that. You can make that argument, but a trial would bear out whether that was appropriate or not. You can make that argument. But how can you make an argument for not indicting those officers, for not formally accusing them of doing harm intentionally or unintentionally, such as involuntary manslaughter, to Eric Garner? How can you not indict? I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I generally understand these things. I don't understand how you cannot indict those officers. If you disagree, send me a note. tjbradio@gmail.com, repeating TJB like Tom, John, Bill, or Tijuana Brass, tjbradio@gmail.com. Or call us. In 2 weeks, we'll be back on the air, same time, or as they used to say, same bat time, same bat station. Our guest call-in next time is 347-850-8702, as it is now. Or as I say, if you drop us a note, you want us to call you, we'll do that. We'll put you on the air, perhaps. Explain to me how you Garner. If there's something else you want to talk about, you can drop me a note there as well. In the meantime, please take a look at bushmanbooks.blogspot.com. We'd be honored if you did, and we'd be flattered further if you join us next week right here, again, at the Jeff Bushman Show. And if you want to look at our page, it's blogtalkradio.com/Jeff, J-E-F-F, hyphen Bushman. Until next time, please be kind to each other. Have a great week. Good night.